You're as sweet as straw. Okay. Last week, come to find out, I didn't write that. The poem that I quote to you, and I said I wrote that, and you all laughed at because it was so funny, and you thought it was so ridiculous and not good poetry. Come to find out, 20 years ago, an actual band wrote that, performed it, put it on an album, and you thought it was terrible. So, ha, the joke's on you. I didn't mean to, but I wrote a whole poem, and then at the very bottom, indented, which, you know, if you're poetic like I am, I should have known. That means I'm quoting someone, but I just remember, last week, I was just trying to get you one that was funny, and the rest of it was not funny, but the baboons part was funny. We are in songs again. We're in poetry again, but not mine, because I still haven't quoted one of mine to be factual. We are going to look at Song of Songs, though. Now, if you don't have your Bible, I want you to look at me, but if you weren't with me, last week it opened with a song of this woman singing, "Let him kiss me with kisses." And we saw desire and attraction, and she's not silent about her husband's what attracts her to her. She is not silent about his character. Like last week, it's just the idea of youthful beauty fades, but character endures, and that's how a relationship endures. Like what you should be attracted to more than that person's looks is their character. And that character will get you through deep suffering. Beauty will not. Charm is deceptive. Beauty is vain, right? Like those things, not in, like they're empty in the way that they won't endure. They won't get you through the real stuff of life, but character will. So it's a big deal to highlight that last week. But now we get into the power of words. So if you don't have a Bible, Song of Songs, chapter 1, there should be one around you. I'll see Emily. I don't know what page it is, but if you get to like Psalms, hit Proverbs, and then keep going, and you'll get to Song of Songs. Okay? Song of Songs, verse 5 of chapter 1. Daughters of Jerusalem, remember, you got to feel this. This is a song. This is like a liner of an album. This is not a story. This is lyrics. Daughters of Jerusalem, I'm dark like the tents of Kedar, yet lovely like the curtains of Solomon. Do not stare at me because I am dark, for the sun has gazed on me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me take care of the vineyards. I have not taken care of my own vineyard. Tell me, you whom I love, where do you pasture your sheep? Where do you let them rest at noon? Why should I be like the one who veils herself beside the flocks of your companions? So what we get into is a little bit of her story, her song. And this is what she's singing. And we find out she's singing a little bit like Cinderella. Manual labor, siblings not great to her. She's got mean brothers. That's what it means when she says, my mother's sons. That's what you call your brothers when you're so grateful for them, right? my mother's sons. Like, I mean, you guys do that sometimes. I think spouses, you're like, your kid. You're like, wait, I thought we had a kid. But when he acts like me, he's my kid? Okay. And when he acts like me, when he's doing terrible things, he's my kid. Yeah, you're my mother's sons. Why? They have her working out the fields. We don't know why. But she's tanned. She's dark from working in the fields. So many people have just misconstrued that verse and talking about like it's race. Just read the next verse. Stop ripping things out of context. At least read the things around it. At least the verse before and the verse after. All right. She's a bit insecure about it. She's always working outside. She's saying, I'm always working outside, and so I'm tan, and I can't take care of myself. I'm always taking care of that vineyard. I can't take care of my vineyard. Her hair isn't dead. And like the rest of history, until recently, it was fashionable to look pale. Like, I was born in the wrong era. Because like 100 years ago and the rest of history, I'm the best looking dude in the room because, you know, I'm a vampire. I look like one of those Team Edward. That's what she's saying. Like, I'm not Pell. Everyone else, they think Pell's great. Okay? She's like, I'm not Pell. And so she's bemoaning this fact, actually. Bemoaning it to the daughters of Jerusalem, which we don't know much about other than they're not married, and I think they live in Jerusalem. That's really what we know about them. The apparent contrast is that they're urban ladies, and she's what? A country bumpkin. She's out in the fields, always working. She doesn't live in Jerusalem, does she? She's always outside, always working with mean brothers. So she sings to them, don't look at me. Don't stare at my insecurity. It is very noticeable, so don't just look at me. And words are powerful. They matter. What you say to your lover matters. What you say to yourself matters. Like, I think the worst things I've ever said to a person was to me. Now, I've said some terrible things about you, but not, I'm just kidding, not to you. No, the most terrible things I've said to a person have been to me. I think she said this to herself multiple times before because she's singing it now. It's in her heart. I don't think it's the first time she's like, they saw me. Don't, no, this has been on her mind. She's embarrassed of her appearance, and now she's singing it. But she wants to be with him. And I love this beautiful relationship. Like, she's insecure, and she goes to find her man. So she's singing to them, like, don't look at my insecurity. Man, where are you? I want to find you. Later, she compares their love to a desert oasis. That's what En Gedi was, a desert oasis. So she's asking where to find him. How can she get to him? Even if that means noon, which would mean more sun, she'll go. Even if it's risky socially, which is what she means by veil herself, looking like a lady of the roads, not streets. Like, that's the face veiled imagery. Tell me where you are, my love, so I can be with you. Wouldn't that be a glorious pattern in marriage? Wife, when you're feeling insecure, you run to the oasis that is your marriage. That your husband makes you feel safe and secure. And that thing that you are insecure about is an opportunity for your lover to love you. Wouldn't that be a glorious pattern? Well, it's the pattern of the song. It's what happens again and again, is that there's this intimacy, and everything kind of revs up, and then it shifts to another scene, and the scene is, again, they're separated, there's some distance between, they're longing for another, they want to go after one another. They want to get back to be able to see one another. It's just that repeated pattern of, when I'm insecure, when I'm doubting, when I'm struggling, wherever I'm at, I'm going to the oasis that is our marriage, because our marriage is an oasis. Why? Because how Jesus has blessed us, he's made us new, that he's changed us. And yes, there's two sinners in this marriage, but there's also a Savior has changed us and made us completely new. And give us new hearts where we can actually love one another instead of use that person for the rest of our days. That thing you are insecure about is an opportunity for your lover to love you. I mean, body image issues are still present. This is nothing new. This has been happening. Like, she bemoans this, sings it. Now, you, husband, I want you to know that about your wife. Meaning, I don't know if your wife's going around the house like Cinderella singing of her insecurities to imaginable women, but If she's not, then you have to do some work to find them out or to know her, to live with her in an understanding way, a knowledge way, a intimate knowledge of her knowing, and a got to be an ongoing knowing because she keeps growing and she keeps changing. So you've got to keep learning what's new about her. Don't forget all that her life was before you met her and that you really don't know about her. There's so much you can know. Like, know her insecurities. Why? Because it's an opportunity for you to love her. You'll see, verse 8. This is the man. Again, I said the last week, these subtitles that help us, kind of like a play, helping us who's talking. That's not in the original. It's all by context clues, but it's there to try to help us. So now you see man. This is the guy talking back, singing back, sorry. If you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the flock and pasture your own goats near the shepherd's tents. I compare you, my darling, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are beautiful with jewelry. Your neck with its necklace will make gold jewelry for you, accented with silver. Like, this is, it's hard if you don't know. Like, this is poetry. So you're like, what's the tone? I don't know if you've ever tried to send any poetic language via text, and someone's like, what is that? And you're like, it was a pun, it was a joke, it was this. And they're like, oh, okay. Because literally, it sounds weird. Like, yeah, it was not literal. Sorry. Like, I didn't mean it that way, I meant it this. But what's happening here, this is flirty. She's like, where are you? And he's like, don't you know? You don't know? Oh, if you don't know, come follow the tracks. He's like, come find me. It's amazing. Poetry is amazing. Because you have that flirtiness happening, but also you have, I mean, just to talk literally or what is actually said, she says, I'm dark like tents, and he's like, no, you're a horse. okay. I mean, I guess that made her feel better. I don't know. Just their image of beauty was different. But seriously, instead of dismissing her fears about her appearance or saying that's ridiculous or that's, you're being unspiritual, you're being sinful, you're being too, the man responds kindly by repeatedly affirming her beauty and enhancing it through gifts, which, just to be clear, that's the goal of the gold, the jewelry, the earrings, is to accentuate her beauty. He's building her up and assuring her of his love with affirmation, with praise. He's singing to her heart. If lodged in her heart is that insecurity that she's singing, he's singing to her heart how beautiful she is to him, how lovely she is to him, how that's me, how she sees herself, but how I see you. This is how I see you. And he's singing it over her and to her and to her and to her. Like, we know we speak truth to lies, but can we also know that we speak encouragement to the discouraged and affirmations to the insecure? Husband, your wife wants to hear what excites you about her. She wants to hear what you like about her. She loves hearing your affirmation when she's feeling down or insecure. She needs you to breathe that life into her soul. In his book, Practicing Affirmation, Sam Crabtree says this. I was just checking, but now I'm not trying to. A fire not stoked goes out. A refrigerator unplugged rots the eggs, which were perfectly good not too long ago. A garden not tended erupts with weeds, not vegetables. Affirmation is the fire-stoking, refrigerator-electrifying, garden-tending side of relationships. His book, the subtitle is God-centered affirmation. Being able to affirm someone in a way that is centered on God, that ultimately gives praise to God, but honors that person, that shows honor, as Romans 12 says, encourages, as multiple epistles tell us. Maybe you're not good at it. I wasn't. I didn't pick it up as a kid. I picked up the other. I was more prone to point out my mother's weakness and joke about it. So you may be not good at it. May not come natural. It takes intentional effort. Looking at her, considering her, knowing her, and speaking that into her eyes with all the intimacy that you can't stand. That's what it takes. This song is just a masterclass in showing you. If you're like, I don't know where to start. I can't do this. I never know how to do this. This is it. It just shows you again and again how you can communicate, how you can talk to, how you can see your wife and see her character and see her beauty and see what's lovely about her, and then take note of that and allow that to come out of you so she's actually blessed. Like, it's one thing to begin to take note of it. It's a big thing to actually communicate. To be able to communicate to her, she actually hears you, of what you think about her, what you feel about her. Maybe you don't know this. Sam has another thought. He says this. Maybe also this. When our mouths are empty of praise for others, it is probably because our hearts are full of love for self. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's really difficult for you to affirm your spouse because it's you. Whether you're always affirming yourself because you're insecure or you feel so great because you have no insecurity, either way, it's about you and you have no space to express that for her. What I think is happening very clearly is God is letting you know, men, in this song, this is what your wife needs. She needs your words. She needs romantic words. She needs words of desire. She needs words of affirmation. And in this, I don't feel out of the box here, because it's like, yeah, this is what we've been talking about, right? As a church, as a family, this is how we should do this. But really, I'm just saying, here's the spotlight of how you should honor one another. But now, take that spotlight and in your marriage, is this happening? Like, we come around membership and in groups and we honor one another, but like, do you do that in your relationship, in your marriage? You honor them? Because to me, it'd just be very weird if like we worked on this as a whole church, and we're growing as a whole. But then when it gets into your house has a different culture, a different ethos than what we've set, and it's not a good ethos. You know what I mean? It's a dishonoring, it's a disrespectful, it's a discouraging environment. It would be weird. And so really what we're just saying is, what we've been talking about with us is it should be happening in your marriage for sure. Proverbs 31:30 says this, a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Now, that does not mean worshiped. That means what I just said, affirmed, encouraged, blessed with your words, built up with your words, is to be. The CSB will read it will be, as in it, like it should happen. It's expected to happen, just like Proverbs is like, this is what the normal case of prayer. And what I'm saying is like that should be happening. So if it's not happening, it's us. It's us. So the women in your life that fear the Lord, their character is there, or it's growing, because you can't despise small beginnings. So if there's a little bit there, you know what you can do? You can celebrate the little bit that's there. You can. And you know what happens? You usually grow and replicate what you celebrate. It's an old axiom, but it's just true. Like, there's some things that I need to course correct and discipline out of my sons, but there's a lot that if I'll just fan the flame of what they are doing, it grows and grows and grows and grows and grows, and sometimes dwarfs the stuff, it pushes out the stuff that I was going to maybe correct in the future. Woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. And now I just love this next part. Like, she narrates at the beginning and she narrates at the end, but who is that band? The Civil Wars. Like, there's a little duet here in the middle. Like, they kind of just sing back and forth. It's really sweet. So, the woman, verse 12. While the king is on his couch, my perfume, my nard, releases its fragrance. The one I love is a sachet of myrrh to me, spending the night between my breasts. The one I love is a cluster of henna blossoms to me in the vineyards of En-Gedi. That's a desert oasis. Him, how beautiful you are, my darling, how very beautiful. And now it's like, oh, I don't know if this is just a description. I think this is one of his nicknames for her, because this is the second time, and it's going to get repeated later. Your eyes are doves. I don't know if he just called her dove eyes. We talked about last week, though, like, we have no understanding of why. And then just to be very clear again, Hebrew metaphors are not primarily visual. He doesn't mean, like, it would be weird, right? A flock of goats on your head looks weird. Dove eyes looks weird. It's conveying maybe the beauty or the flintiness of her eyelids. Like, there's a lot of her liveliness. There's so many people speculating. But I think it's a nickname. Your eyes are doves. She comes back, verse 16. How handsome you are, my love. How delightful. Our bed is verdant green. The beams of our houses are cedars, and our rafters are cypresses. I'm a wildflower of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. His reply, singing this duet right here. Like a lily among thorns, so is my darling among the young women. Her, like an apricot tree among the trees of the forest, so is my love among the young men. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banquet hall, and he looked on me with love. Sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apricots, for I am lovesick. May his left hand be under my head, and his right arm embrace me. I love it. So he's got this back and forth, but then she finishes with just this longing. Now he's on the couch, but there's no evidence that she's with him. What seems to be happening is that there's continued this distance. Like, maybe he's enjoying a festive meal with friends, couch meaning table. He's reclining at couch, reclining at table. But she's confident that her scent can nonetheless bridge the gap. No matter how far we are, you can smell my scent. It bridges the gap. Like, she longs for her beloved. That's again Dode. That's her erotic lover. But not merely to lie with her, but to spend the whole night like a sachet of myrrh. Like, that's old school deodorant. Sleep with a bag of resin around your neck. But that's what she meant. That's what she wanted him to be like. To sit right there all night. They can't be together. She's lovesick, and the myrrh will be like a stand-in, like a replacement. I imagine that you're here with me like this is here with me. And I imagine I'm smelling you like I'm smelling this fragrance. And again, he calls her beautiful. She calls him handsome, but this is the first time she actually mentioned his appearance, and then she moves quickly past to something else. Let me just come back to it. Just words of blessing. Now, not to get confused again with flattery, which is a way to try to bless someone to get them to do what you want, right? It's just another way to manipulate them. But blessing is telling the truth with the desire to build up. Flattery is telling falsities to build up, or telling the truth to manipulate. Telling a side of the truth, usually a piece of the truth to manipulate. What they're doing is just blessing. They're taking inventory and they're accounting and just communicating, just singing back and forth why they think that person is lovely, and then hearing the other person tell them they're lovely. It's blessing words. Like, what if you wrote a poem with cursing words? It'd probably be a rap song. But it'd be very strange. If he highlighted what he didn't like about her, what sometimes bothers him, her annoying quirks. You leave all the lights on like it's the Hanukkah. It's a Jewish joke. It's the festival of lights. All right. Read the Old Testament, guys, you Gentiles. I compare your food to Ninevite charcoal. What if he said that? What if that? I just love it. I know. I just want you to get out of that frame of like, do you see what's happening? I say that because some of your words are that poetry. That's how you talk. Your inventories and the account and the records that you take of your spouse and then you recite back to them is a rap song. It's a lot of cursing, not cussing, a lot of cursing, a lot of like negativity, pointing out flaws, tearing down, ripping apart, pointing out all the things that need to grow in and never what they're actually growing in. Blessing. And she blesses him. She speaks of his handsomeness. But like I said, she moves quickly past that, almost seemingly impatiently, to like their future together as a couple. To be clear, when she states, our bed is verdant, she's not praising the color choices of their furniture. This is not American interior decorating. She's reveling in the expectation of they're going to be fruitful and multiply. And when she speaks of cedar beams and pine rafters, she's not talking about, I don't even know their names, the Magnolia folks. She's not asking for a mid-century, thank you. I know, yeah. She's not asking for a mid-century modern. She's celebrating the enduring firmness in their relationship. What she's saying, it's solid. Our relationship, it's solid. It's solid enough to build a lasting family. It's similar to Lady Wisdom in Proverbs 9:1. Proverbs 9:1 says, wisdom has built her house. She has carved out her seven pillars. And this is one of the many indicators in this song that this isn't a youthful, passionate fling. This woman is singing of an enduring marriage, of building a family with this man. But then again, she's honest, even in her song, and she honestly sings another insecurity to him. She says, I'm a lily among lilies. Now, earlier she said, I'm dark like this, but I know I'm lovely. So like she has some sense. But again, she gets like I'm just a lily among lilies. And he says, no, to me, all other girls are stickers. You're the flower. You're the flower. That's what's happening. So again, he speaks to her. He doesn't just throw it off. He's like, no, that's how you see yourself. Let me, I hear you, but I'll even take your language and I'll use it on you to flip back and tell you how I feel about you. This is who you are. A lily among thorns. So what we see here is just this communication, pursuit, affirmation. If you're familiar with conflict, you're familiar probably with, if you fight a lot, if you're familiar with the theory of conflict and resolution, that's a better way to say it, then you're familiar with the idea of fight or flight. And then they added a freeze in. I think there's similar things in y'all's marriage. In y'all's marriage, generally, there's freeze, meaning just silence, quiet. There's fight, you're fighting all the time. Or there's flirt. I think, in general, those are your three options. You can be silent, you can be aggressive, or you can whisper sweet muffins. And yeah, I said sweet muffins. One time in college, I was leaving a basketball game, and I saw a couple right in front of me that I know, DJ and Daisha, sitting in their single cab truck, and he's driving, and she, like his lady, is right next to him in the middle, puts his arm around her. We're in line trying to get out of the parking lot, and I'm in with a couple of other people in the car, and one guy looks for it, and he goes, "Hey, look, DJ's whispering Sweet Muffins." And we said, "What? You mean chocolate? Blueberry? Banana nut? What do you think he's saying to her?" And we're like, "You mean Sweet Nothings? That's what it is." I want to choose to flirt. I don't know if those are the only options, but if those are some of the options, what I want to choose in my marriage for the rest of my life is not to be quiet, not to shut out my wife, not to push her out, not to keep using the silent treatment as some kind of weird punishment or manipulation to get her to do what I want. What I'd like to do is to keep flirting with her now and for the rest of my days, and that be the rhythm, the pattern, the vibe of our marriage. And I want that for you too. I do. It's really hard to fight with someone when you're flirting with them. It's really hard to go cold and freeze on them, go quiet and give them the cold shoulder when you're flirting with them. But the inverse is also true. If you're constantly fighting, it's hard to switch gears and be like, Sweet Muffins, you know. It's hard. It's hard. But here, you just see the back and forth, and what you have is, ooh, this is lovely. This becomes kind of the stand. Oh, wait, maybe this is similar to Adam and Eve. Maybe this is what a marriage should actually look like. Maybe this is something singing to us that we should get caught up in. But then the song shifts. Kind of hard. So they sing back and forth. They have that duet. They have this affirmation. But then she shifts and she addresses the ladies again. After singing with her lover of their love, now she says, verse 7, "Young women of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and the wild does of the field." That's weird, right? I charge you. I command you. I've never stopped my kids and be like, "Hey, get out and clean that backyard. I charge you by the squirrels in that tree." They're like, "Okay, like, what authority? I've tried to shoot those things with a BB gun. What authority?" Well, that's where if you can just pause a little bit on the poetry, it's poetic. And if we knew Hebrew, we would just easily see it, that there's a play on God's names here, both of them. The wild, the gazelles and the young does are a play on was it El Shaddai and the Lord of Hosts, I think. Both of them. So what she's saying, in a way, is being able to invoke the name of God without invoking the name of God, and saying, "This is such a big deal, ladies. I charge you by God's name," without saying God's name, because to them it's holy, right? Like, they're very, very, very careful to ever use his name. So to sing it like this, maybe we'd be different. But she did. She gets it in there. "I charge you by God, do not stir up or awaken love until the appropriate time." Which just brings us back to last week. This is not stay away from it because it's gross, right? It's stay away from it because it's glorious. Stay away from it because it's powerful. Do not wake this sleeping giant, because love has the power. It's so powerful. It'll come in and reorder your other desires. It will overwhelm you and make you feel sick to your stomach when you can't see your lover. That's what she's saying. Like, "I can't see him. I'm longing for the future. I want to be with him." I'm lovesick. Not because of his presence, because of his absence. So because of this, she then charges the ladies, the young daughters, these single young women who seem to be of age to marry in Jerusalem. That's kind of the demo. Tells them, don't awake this sleeping giant until it's time. So clearly, just in that means singles, this is a good thing to be able to honor the power of love and say, this is what God has gifted, and if he's not given me marriage, then I'm not going to look for it on my own terms. I'm going to entrust myself to him. Which feels weird because probably feels like I'm lobbing truth bombs at you, like so many other people have said when say like, hey, well, the Bible says singleness is a gift. It's like, well, it doesn't feel like a gift, but if you keep telling me, maybe I'll feel different. But what the Bible says is in Genesis, it's not good to be alone. And then Paul says in Corinthians that if you're single, you can stay single. If you're in Christ, it's good. And so you're like, wait, are you contradicting? No, Paul never equates singleness with aloneness. We do a lot. In his mind, his singleness allowed him the opportunity for deep, rich, meaningful friendships, not it hindered him from them. So it may not feel like a gift. This may feel difficult, but the charge from God is that this is power. It's not gross. This is powerful. And so if you're not ready, and if this is not your time, do not wake the sleeping giant. That's you, kids, too, teenagers, children, that's you. That you should see the power of love in your mom and dad or in other relationships and in this song and say, yes, that is glorious and good, and I want that someday. But it's what did we say last week? Unquenchable passion then. But right now, unflinching purity. Commitment to Jesus. Commitment to his way. In singleness, in marriage, wherever I go. And then married couples, can I just tell you this also applies to you? There's never an appropriate time for adultery. Never an appropriate time for emotional affair. This do not stir up love is also pertaining to that. Do not flirt with it, or it will burn you and your house down. So don't waken it up. Don't go there. So it's like an interesting bridge, if you think about it as a song, or kind of a repeating, like, I guess it's a verse. I mean, it's maybe hook three, but just coming back to the daughters of Jerusalem and talking to them. Like, I'm going to celebrate the power of love with my lover, but let me pause real quick and tell you, because of this, don't wake the sleeping giant until it's time. When it's time, then throw yourself head over heels. Paul says that singleness does not equate to aloneness, because the marriage is not the context of deep, intimate friendships. the context for deep, intimate friendships is the church. That's how Jesus speaks of his people. That while you're not awakening love, while you're not, that you are not isolated, lonely, you are part of a family. Needed, interwoven. Needed in presence, needed in gifts, needed in point of view. What I think there's glimmers of, if this talks so beautifully about a relationship between this man and this woman, it just does give this glimmers over and over and over and over and over again of the cosmic romance of Jesus' love for his bride. Like, it is a straight line, dot to dot, to see Ephesians 5 praising this woman, affirming her, and washing her with the water of her of word. Do you see how it just makes sense? It's like, yes, this is what a husband does, because this is what Jesus does and is doing to us now. Into our insecurities, speaking truth and affirmation. Into our discouragement, speaking encouragement. It all just shows how powerful love is, but then you just, oh, well, where does love come from? And then why is love so powerful? And why is it so glorious? Well, all because this is just really, you're not going to be married after death. All of this in this life is pointing to how much Jesus is infatuated, obsessed, in love with, to use all that language, with his bride. And it's all going to culminate in this wedding, like we're going to get in chapter 4, but in this wedding of him with his bride. So really, it's hard to say this, but we're kind of like in this stage. We are intimate lovers, but don't you wait for the day when, like, we have that future. When actually, I'm not thinking about looking into Jesus' face, or I'm not thinking about this man holding her. No, I'm looking into Jesus' face. Let's pray.